Oh, winter can be hard. So why make it harder for yourself by going treat-free? Get your slurp on with Costa's Spanish Latte. It's sweet, velvety and absolutely delicious. It's your daily latte with a little added indulgence. Brighten up your winter and get your slurp on with Costa Coffee's Spanish Latte. Plus, join the Costa Club for exclusive offers and even more treats. GB stores only.
We've been talking a long time. Anything else? Any quick hits, Tim?
I think we can just skip over the stuff and get into the weekend. What do you think?
No, because this is what you do. And I know you're gaslighting me a little bit because this episode's getting long. We'll do it quick. The Bruin. Morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. It's funny how a couple days, Tim, can just change your whole mindset. Remember Wednesday? I was like, I don't feel good. I was being a little baby. I feel fine. I feel great. And I haven't slept much in the last 3 or 4 days just because I've been working at the house and just I've been playing. You know, I'm cheap, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So 2 weeks ago, I was at my buddy's house for dinner and he built his house like 3 or 4 years ago. Around the same time as I'm building mine. And it's he was talking about the stage of the drywall, which I'm at right now. And he's like, yeah, you know, drywall's great. It takes him 2 months to do it. And he said, what I didn't expect was the electric bill that I got for those 2 months, because you have to put these commercial industrial electric heaters in there to heat the house so the drywall mud can stay moist, it can dry, and you just need those climate conditions. And he's like, for 2 months, I had a bill of $5,000 for my electric bill. And my jaw dropped and my eyes went saucer. I was like, get out of here. Really? He's like, yeah. He's like, get ready. And then so literally that week, I go into my house and there's these big red industrial heaters. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And so my wheels start spinning. Like, I don't want to spend $10,000 in the next 2 months on heat. And I go, ting, I have a fireplace in the living room that I can heat up and we can do this and it'll heat the whole house. The drywallers aren't a fan of this. They want their traditional, the heaters work. We know they work. We're just going to keep them fired up. So they want the heaters going just 100% certain. I'm thinking, no, we're not going to do this. So it's been a battle and hopefully they don't listen to this because I could probably get in trouble. So they turn the heaters on and they work throughout the day. For the last 2 weeks, this is what I've been doing. Hence why I'm a little tired. They work from 5 a.m. to 3 p.m. The heaters are on. I get home around 3 p.m. I immediately go to the house and unplug all the heaters. And I stock the fire. And the fire's ripping. And I continue to stock the fire. I go there at 9 p.m. And then I set my alarm, Tim, for 2 or 3 in the morning. And I go out at 2 or 3 in the morning and I stock the fire again and I plug in all the heaters. So they think the heaters have been running all night long, but they've been unplugged. The house is still warm because the fire is going, but they're none the wiser. So I've been doing this now for a week and a half. And it seems to be working out because they have no clue because the house is still warm. And I figure by doing this, instead of being 10,000, 5,000, I'm cutting it in half. So I'm saving $5,000 just for getting up in the middle of the night every night at 2 or 3 in the morning and taking 10, 15 minutes to go out there and throw some wood in the fire. I think it's a win-win.
Yeah, but at what cost? I mean, if you're not sleeping and you're cranky because of it and it impacts your life and how you treat the people around you because you're not happy. I mean, I'm glad that you're happy today, but I imagine Wednesday maybe was tough. Was a tough day.
You should see the bruises my kids have. Just beat them. that is what it is. It's one of those things. My boss here at my engineering job, he always says, I wouldn't step over $5,000. You know, it's a lot of money. So if you can do it, do it. And the house is warm and they haven't even noticed anything. There was one night where I didn't plug in the heaters and they came in and it was warm, but they got after me. And they said, we have to have these heaters on. They have to stay on all the time. I'm like, really? Do they? So I plugged them in, reluctantly, because I don't want them coming back and saying, well, the drywall didn't work because of you. That's why it's not looking good. But I also want to turn the fireplace on to get the drywall and like acclimated to the climate, because it's drier and there's less moisture in the air. So I want them to see, okay, well, this is what's going to happen when the fire is going. There's less moisture, the drywall, the seams might crack, this and that. So it's kind of like there's a couple issues working at the same time. Anyways, so that's what I've been doing. It's sneaky. You ever do you stuff like sneaky. That? You're not cheap. See, you spend. I'm cheap.
You are cheap. Yeah, no, I don't have really an example like that. But it's funny that you're so secretive about it, but you just told thousands of people and now it's documented. And now it's out there. So if they don't listen to it, people in Traverse do.
I know.
For all you know, I know. Like someone that they get lunch with is like, oh, dude, I listened to John Scott's thing. You're doing his drywall, right?
Yeah.
Wait till you hear what he has to say about it.
No, and I it will happen. I'm too open on this show. It's happened before. Before we interviewed the Chicago Blackhawks guy, you weren't on. You were on vacation. Charlie Romeliotis. The episode before, I was like, I'm going to get this guy fired. Like, I'm going to get him to lose his job. So Charlie, the first thing he said is, so you're going to try to get me fired? I'm like, Charlie, I was just kidding. Just kidding. Because, I just assume there's like a handful of people who listen, the friends of the show, the people on Patreon, and that's it. But there's like thousands and thousands and thousands of people who listen, and we appreciate it. But yeah, what are you going to do? Speaking of spending money, Tim, speaking of friends of the show, we got an interesting show today. So we have our Patreon with our friends of the show. They join, you pay $5 a month, and it's a lot of fun. With the Patreon comes a Slack channel where everybody's involved. There's a lot of people in the Slack channel. I'm on it every day. Tim's on it every day. We just go back and forth. We're shooting the breeze. And the community is actually chatting a lot between themselves. It's a beautiful thing to see. So the one thing we've noticed is there's lots of people, different fan groups. People get a little salty. They go, hey, why don't you talk about my team? So we got a DM from someone yesterday and from Mike saying, hey, Tim, where's the love for the Devils? In yesterday's episode, what do you say? What do you say, Tim? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Well, this is coming off the heels of us covering the Leafs on Wednesday's episode because of a YouTube comment. And yeah. This one's actually, it wasn't from our Slack. It was from Instagram. But he said, hey, well, Tim.
What the hell? So hold on. Why are we listening to these people who aren't paying for it?
Yeah, oh, I know. Yeah, fair point. But so because we glossed over the Devils and we kind of said, hey, the Devils are doing fine, but we're talking about the Lightning and the Leafs and whatever. And he said, where's the love for the Devils? In yesterday's episode, John said the Devils are just okay. Yeah, they had a tough road trip, but the Lightning did the same thing, and they still get the praise. Before the holiday break, the Devils held seven teams to less than 20 shots on goal to break an NHL record. That team defense doesn't happen by accident. I feel that they should get a little more love for what they're doing in the East. But hey, maybe it was really just a hot streak, and then we'll see. And then he made a little joke, too, of like, hey, if they lose to the Rangers tonight, then you can tell me to shut up, which they did.
Yeah, shut
they
your mouth.
For the Rangers.
Yeah, so shut that yap of yours, Mike. They lost in overtime, rightfully so, but it was a good game. I caught some of that game. I thought the reason I was watching, I thought Rempe and McDermott were going to fight, but McDermott took a penalty in the first in the offensive zone. He didn't get much ice time after that. Rempe was playing it safe. I think he realizes he's on thin ice here. And everybody's watching. So he played a really conservative game, didn't really do too much physical wise. But anyways, back to the Devils. You like the Devils. You're a big Hughes guy. You're a big Devils fan. Would you like to talk about the New Jersey Devils a little bit, Tim?
Just a little bit. And I don't know if I love the idea of us like having our listeners dictate the agenda of the shows to us, but I'm glad that it's important to them. So shout out to Mike. So I think I responded to him in the moment. I said, listen, I think the reason we went over them so quickly is we sort of expect them to be this good. Like the Leafs seem like a different team. I think many people thought Tampa was going to fall off and then they're looking really good. We knew the Devils were going to be good and now they're good. The same reason we don't spend a lot of time in Carolina. But I think you have to give them a little bit of credit where it's due. They're second in the Metro to Washington Capitals, and that's a team that's surprising everyone, obviously. The Devils are top 10 in goals for and in goals against. Jack Hughes leading the team, not surprisingly, 50 points in 44 games. It's about a 93-point pace. I did the math earlier, and I think we have to revisit the idea of Jack Hughes ever being a 100-point player, because I think this is probably who he is. But they're getting great play up and down the lineup. Jesper Bratt's right behind him. Nico Hischier started off really hot, slowed down just a little bit, but he's scoring a lot of goals. Timo Meier's playing well. Dougie is playing really well. He's never been a huge numbers guy, but he's a does it all, everything defenseman. Yeah. He's really, really good at it. And then you started, like, again, two guys that played really well in the beginning of the season have come down a little bit, but surprising numbers, Paul Cotter and Stefan Nosen. Paul Cotter, I think, has 10 goals already in the season, and he probably won't continue it. But yeah, you're seeing a great production from them. And as I was thinking about this team and looking at their stats, I think it seems similar to me to what you said about the Leafs earlier this week, where the two big differences in their lineup, first is between the pipes, and that's the goaltending with Jacob Markstrom. Obviously, one of the bigger offseason transactions, certainly the biggest one for them. He's playing fantastic. And I think this is sort of what you hope for, is that you have a goalie, a good goalie on a bad team, and a good team without a goalie. When the two combine, hopefully good things happen. We talked about this with like the Leafs and John Gibson years ago. Like
the Avalanche and Blackwood, yeah.
Yeah, like if that had gotten together, all of a sudden it changes everything. Well, it looks like it has. Jacob Markstrom is 28-3, 2.2 goals against, .911 save percentage. He's a huge pickup. He's playing really well. So I think you have to think of him being a difference maker, especially when you get into the playoffs and what they could do there, some damage they could do. The other piece, and this is where I want to get your take, John, new coach, just like the Leafs, except very similar to the Leafs because it's their old coach, Sheldon Keefe. How much credit do you give him for the start they've had? Or is this about what you would expect from them, regardless of who's coaching?
It's interesting that we're talking about how great they are on defense and holding teams to less than 20 shots. But Sheldon Keefe is known as this offensive mastermind, that his X's and O's and his zone entries and his systems are just mostly offensive. So it's interesting that that's what this team is kind of hanging their hat on this year. So that's strange. But yeah, you know, Lindy Ruff last year with the Devils, they stunk. They were everyone's kind of, much like the Rangers were this year, they were everyone's trendy pick to be a Stanley Cup contender, and they totally fell flat on their face. I think when they ended the season, they were closer to the lottery than they were to making the playoffs as far as wild card and this and that and the other. So they were atrocious last year, and they had injuries and they battled through it. But I think you nailed it. They're expected to be good. When you look at their roster and how they're made up and the moves they made in the offseason, this is a good team. They should be exactly where they're at. But the thing with the Devils, and the same can be said for the Hurricanes, the same can be said for a lot of other teams, do it in the playoffs, right? Like, it's great. You have great players, but for whatever reason, you get to the playoffs, you might win a round, that's great. You can't string together two or three rounds to really get us excited. And until they do that, I don't know, I'm going to reserve my opinions until a later date, but they are a good team. And last year I was all in on Dougie Hamilton. I think that was a huge injury when he went down. That was the straw that really broke him last year, but he's playing great hockey. Jack Hughes, I think you're right. Yeah, I don't think maybe once or twice he'll crack the 100-point mark. We'll get to another player later on in this episode who hasn't done it either. And I was shocked when I saw this. But yeah, they're a great team. I watched them last night. Hughes is all over the ice. Jesper Bratt, maybe one of the most underrated players in the league.
I think so.
Just terrific. Terrific little hockey player, buzzes around the ice. So anyways, Mike, the Devils are good. But what do you want us to say? It's just, yeah, they should be good. They should win.
The goaltending is one thing, but I forget who they played two playoffs ago, maybe Carolina or Florida, where they just got tossed around. They're not a big, strong team. Then they go out and bring in Timo Meier, and you get Dougie back, and you hope that you can kind of match up against some of the big teams that are just made for the playoffs. And I don't know the Devils are that team. So we'll see what moves they make, or maybe, you know, they're talented enough that they can overcome some of the physical shortcomings, but I think that's going to be a factor when they get to the postseason.
Yeah, they brought in Brendan Dillon. He was supposed to be he is a physical force in the back end. He plays with Dougie Hamilton. They're a good 1-2, but then they get some decent pieces. I think Brett Pesce was a good pickup this offseason too. He plays with Luke Hughes. Yeah. So they have the yin and the yang, the puck mover, the kind of the stay-at-home defenseman. I like this team. But when I look at the Eastern Conference, do I really want to, you know, go all in on this team? And he's comparing up to the Tampa Bay Lightning. If they met right now in the playoffs, in the first round, I'm 100% taking the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, that's just all there is to say about it. And it just goes on track record, and it goes on personnel. Who would you rather have, Kucherov or Hughes? Who would you rather have, Nico Hirschier or Braden Point? Vasilevsky or Markstrom? Dougie Hamilton or Hedmund? Every single one of those, you're taking the Tampa Bay. Their depth, you know, you got Hagel, you got Paul. You know, we have Tatar, we have Meyer. I'm taking the Tampa Bay Lightning every day. So until they can change my mind, until they can do it in the playoffs, it's nice what they're doing. They're in second place. That's fantastic. But I'm going to reserve my opinions until later date, but they are playing great. It's nice to see them revert back to what they should be, because last year was so disappointing. I think I picked them to make the Stanley Cup Finals coming out of the East. I think I did. I know I've been in the Burrow area for a long time with the Rangers and the Devils, and they've just let me down every single season. So, all right. Is that enough on the Devils?
That is. Thanks again, Mike, for the message. And let's talk about some other stuff, John. This is your segment.
This is your idea. Segment. I don't have a lot of ideas. Tim's the idea guy, and it flows through me. But I woke up this morning and I thought, let's do a what's their number, because it's fun to get the fans engaged. It's fun to get the listeners kind of engaged in this. And we want to do what's their number. There's a lot of very intriguing UFAs and RFAs that are coming up at the end of this season who have not got a contract. Some have signed already, and we're not going to talk about them. But there are other guys who are superstars or superstars in the waiting. They're going to come to the end of the season. They're going to call up their agent and they're going to say, let's go. Let's get to work. We got to get some money in the bank account. And the first one who should get the highest number is Mitch Marner. Toronto Maple Leafs. Some would say the best player on the team. Others might not say that. He is steady as she goes. The guy consistently plays every single game of the season, very rarely injured. He's a really solid hockey player. He has shored up his defensive zone deficiencies that he might have had. He kills penalties. He's on the power play. He buzzes around the ice. Doesn't really, other than, you know, the contract distractions, cause a kerfuffle in the locker room. Seems to be well-liked by everybody. He's a UFA team. It's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. This has been talked about for the last 3 years with this guy. When are we going to get a deal done? What are we going to do with Marner? What are we going to do with the Big Four? We've talked about it up and down. Now he's coming into his last year. He has 59 points in 43 games. He got 85 last year and 69. He had 99 the year before. He's the other guy who hasn't hit 100. Can you believe that?
That does surprise me. Yeah.
He's had 97. He's had 99. He's had 94. Never hit 100 points. This is his year. He's got 59 and 43. He's on pace for over 100. So I think he'll do it this year unless he gets injured. But what is his number? It is predicated by Austin Matthews. It is predicated by other guys, his comparables. Matthews, a teammate, 13.25. Other superstars in the league, McKinnon, McDavid, Pettersson, Nylander, all making around 12.5, 11.5. Salary cap's going up. It's projected to go higher, higher, higher. All of these guys signed their deals when the salary cap was flat and there was no future of it raising. Gary Bettman, well, he's going to, you know, at one point it was flat for 2-3 years because of COVID and all that junk. Now the cap is just, sky's the limit. 91, 98, 105. What is his number? Does he try to set the new mark, Tim, for the highest salary in the NHL and eclipse Austin Matthews?
Yeah.
That was quite the pause. What was that long pause for?
I feel like you were stopped in the middle of a sentence.
No, that was a legit question I'm posing to you.
Yeah, I don't think it's bigger than Matthews. I don't think you can give him a bigger contract than your 1C, first overall pick, captain goal scorer. Like, he's the guy. So I don't think it's going to be bigger than Matthews, but I think it's a fair comparison. We've seen a lot of examples of players that want the same as their, like, counterpart superstar. You always see like Getzlaff and Perry and Kane and Taze and all these guys are always close or similar numbers. So I think he's looking at that and saying, I want 13.25. I don't know that he gets it though. When McKinnon's making 12.6, McDavid just signed 12.5. I think he's closer in that range. It's hard to make an argument that he's worth more than those guys are. And then you get into like the next kind of tier down, the Pettersson 11.6, and then his teammate Nylander 11.5. I think 12 to 12 and a half is probably where his number should be. He's worth, he could get 13 in the open market, right? But I don't think that I think he wants to be in the Leafs, and I think he's around that 12 million mark. What do you think?
Well, I don't like disagreeing with you.
Yes,
but
you
I
do.
Will, because other teams, in the case of the Edmonton Oilers, where McDavid was making 12.5, Leon, his contract was about to expire after this season. He signed for 14 million a year. So he knew what he was worth. And yeah, he's going to make more than Connor McDavid next year at 12.5 to 14. But McDavid's is up after next year, so he will eclipse 14 eventually. But this is a case of not comparing yourself, I think, to your teammate, knowing what the market is the biggest factor in this. And as a player and an agent, we are told in the PA meetings throughout the summer, you have to set the bar. And listening to Jeremy Swayman this offseason, players are aware of that. They want to set the bar and set the contract standard for the next guy. And if you're Mitch Marner and you're looking at the field and, okay, they signed their contract 12 and a half, salary cap was 90 million, maybe it was 86 at the time. So you.
Oh, winter can be hard. So why make it harder for yourself by going treat free? Get your slurp on with Costa's Spanish latte. It's sweet, velvety, and absolutely delicious. It's your daily latte with a little added indulgence. Brighten up your winter and get your slurp on with Costa Coffee's Spanish latte. Plus, join the Costa Club for exclusive offers and even more treats. GB stores only.
You're getting this percentage of the contract or the salary. You want to exceed that. And so I firmly believe when he walks into that room with Brendan Shanahan and Brad Treveling, he's going to ask for $14 million. I think that's the mark. Even though Matthews makes 13.25, even though, you know, it's tight in Toronto and you got to sign another guy that we're going to talk about in a second. What Mitch Marner does with this team, he's huge. And I've said this before. He is more important than Austin Matthews. I think you can lose Austin Matthews and still be competitive and win. If you lose Mitch Marner, you have no chance, but he has such an impact on this team. So in my eyes, he goes in there and he gets $13.5 to $14 million. I think that's where he lives. He's good. And he has the leverage on Toronto right now. They're losing Tavares. They need to keep him around. And if he doesn't, he can walk. He's a UFA for Pete's sake.
Yeah, I see your point, and I think you could ask for 14, but I think you glossed over something that's really important with the Edmonton comparison, that, yeah, McDavid is making less than Draisaitl now, who's asking for 14, but McDavid's contract is up next year. Matthews just signed. He's in year one. It was 13.25. He's not going to make less than his teammate for a long-term contract. It's just not going to happen. I think Marner asked for 14 knowing that he's going to take 12. So, we'll see what the number starts with and the reports start coming out. I would guess in the next couple of months, but I think the number it's got to be more than Nylander, less than Matthews, 12 to 12 and a half. I think that's a perfect spot for him.
But I don't think Matthews is better than Marner.
That's okay.
Do you think Mitch Marner thinks that Matthews is better than he is? And he goes, okay, you're better than I am. I'll take less. I don't want to upset you and make more than you are.
I think Matthews is better. I understand the argument that maybe Marner is a more important player, and I don't know. There's not a one answer to that. But I think
you're looking at it from a too logical of lens. Like, okay, a corporation has this talent. The highest talent gets paid the most. That's not how it works. It starts new every single season. And you have to just eliminate all the other contracts on your team, because if that was the case, then guys would have to take pay cuts. It's like, okay, well, you're not as good as this guy is, so you need to make less. No, you get paid what the market dictates. And I feel like Marner, if he goes elsewhere, he'll make 14. There's a Chicago Blackhawks team that will pay him $14 million a year. You better believe it.
RFAs always sign for less than what the open market would be. So if he wants to be in Toronto, he's going to have to take less than 13 or less than 14. Yeah.
I don't think he will. I think he will get $13.5 to $14 million from the league. That's where I think and do I think he's worth it? Because that's rarefied air when you get to the $13.5 and $14 million. Like that's McDavid. That's Draisaitl. That's McKinnon. No,
he's not that. He's not.
But he will get paid that much. He has the leverage. It's very rare that you get a guy coming to a UFA year. He's only 27. His runway is so long. Like, this guy will be good for a long time. He's going to sign an 8-year deal. And I bet you 6 of those years, he's going to be just incredible. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. The fact that it hasn't been wrapped up yet is telling. But I do firmly believe that Marner won't take a salary cut just so he can be okay with Austin Matthews and all is well in Toronto world. Like, no, I don't think that's going to happen. All right. Any other comments on Mitch Marner?
No, let's move on to the other names we got.
All right. Minnesota Wild. Cap purgatory for years. Thanks to Zach Parise, Ryan Suter, even Johansson, I think they still have on the books. Finally, Tim, getting some relief this offseason. They're getting $14+ million back to play with. Billy Guerin's happy. The Wild fans are happy. And the happiest person of all is Marco Rossi, their dynamic left wing superstar in the making. Sorry, centerman. He plays on the first line. He's been playing great with Kirill Kaprizov. He's having a breakout season. He got 37 points in 42 games, really coming into his own team. And I'm not saying that sarcastically. The guy has looked lights out this season. Like, absolutely fantastic. They picked him in the first round of 2020. I think he was 9th overall. So they invested a lot in this guy. And now he wants to get paid. He's an RFA on a team that desperately needs some young talent to stay with Matt Boldy, Kirill Kaprizov. Zuccarello's getting older. Foligno's getting older. Johansson's going to be gone soon. He is a core piece of this team. What are his comparables? What's a guy on his team?
Matt Boldy? I think you're going to see one of those situations where he gets paid on future, right? Like, he gets paid on who he's going to be. And that's just kind of what it takes to sign these young guys. And you look at his teammate, Matt Boldy, from what, 2-3 years ago, that's exactly what it was. So I think that's a fair comparable where you're going to see a guy that you're like, is a 60, 70 tops point player worth that? No, but you're getting paid based on the ability to like be a point per game player and beyond. And I was looking at other comparables, and the Tim Stützle one is really interesting. Because so Marco Rossi, is his career high last year was 40 points. He's on pace for about 72 this year. Again, just 23 years old. So you expect that to go up. Whether he's turned into a superstar, it's too early to say. But Tim Stützle signed an 8-year contract worth $8.35 in September 2022. He had just the prior season put up 58 points. We were saying that's way too much. It's not worth it. He hasn't proven that yet. Give him a bridge deal. Give him a 4-year, $6 million contract, whatever. And then the next year he goes up and puts 90 points on the board. So yeah. I think that's a fair comparable where like what that contract looks like paying off. Because if they wait till after the season, maybe it's a higher number. Well, that's a great example of it paying off. He hasn't hit 90 since, but he's a point per game guy. He's an elite player already. So if Rossi can be that guy, I think that's what they're going to bet on. So I think you're going to see a number higher than what you expect, whether it's long term, whether it's 8x8 or something similar to Boldy, to be determined. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think 8x8 is the perfect number for him. I think it's overpaying for the first couple of years, but in the end, that'll be a great deal for the Minnesota Wild. And look at right now, their highest paid player is Kaprizov, making $9 million. And so this is going to be a huge investment for them because Kaprizov will be up in a couple of years. But if they can get him locked in at 8 years, $8 million, you got Matt Boldy locked in for another 7 years or 5 years at $7 million. This is a huge win for this team because you just locked up Brock Faber long term for $8.5 million. If you can get all three of these guys locked up long term for under $10 million with where the cap is going, that's incredible. Like, that's a really good job by Billy Guerin because the way things are going, like puck moving defenseman, first line center who can dish and score and play fast, like Marco Rossi is showing himself to be, he should be making Mitch Marner money. Like, this is a direct comparable to what Mitch Marner is now, but where Marco Rossi could be. Now that he's getting some primo minutes with really good talent, we're seeing what this kid can do. He'll put up 90 points this year. Like, that's his trajectory. So $8 million is a super deal. It's a steal for Billy Guerin if he gets that done.
And even if he's never a 90-point player, the most valuable thing he can do is bring the best out of Kirill Kaprizov. Like, yeah. if he's helping Kaprizov be a 110-point player, 45 goals, like, year over year, and even though he's only a 70-point player and it's 50 assists or whatever, like, whatever, that's worth it. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen a lot of players prove their value just by bringing the best out of their line mates. And by the way, Matt Boldy, I'm looking at it now. It's one of the great things about Puckpedia that I don't think Cat Friendly has. You can see the stats, and then like there's a column of what they were making when they had that year. Anyway, he signed the contract, the big one, January 2023. He only had 63 points at the end of that season, and Rossi's on pace to do even better than that. So I think 8x8 could end up being an underpayment if he continues on this trajectory.
Oh, 100%. But should he take less because Matt Boldy is better?
I don't know that Matt Boldy's better. He definitely should take less than Kaprizov, I'll say that.
Kaprizov's
only making nine. He's gonna be paid.
Well, he's gonna hit the bank, and I think he is obviously injured right now, but he could be the best player in the league. Like,
yeah. Uchi's the MVP at that point.
There's a good argument to be made that he is that good. What he's done since he entered the NHL, scoring 151 and 55, then he got 108. But I think the bigger thing is who he's played with. And we talked to Zuccarello about this. Like, this guy, he's been making chicken salad with chicken manure, right? So now he's finally got some players to play with because of the draft, because of smart signings. But he will get 14 and a half. So you have to plan for that if you're Billy Guerin, because this guy's going to get, he's going to want him. These Russians aren't taking team-friendly deals. I'll tell you that much.
And they're going to have it. So
they will have it, which is nice. All right, moving on. One of your favorite teams, who you have like just a love affair with, who do they have to sign to?
Yeah, Mikko Rantanen of the Colorado Avalanche. And you mentioned his name to me this morning in your text, and I kind of remembered this report, and I had to go back through our notes to find it. But it was back in the beginning of December. Pierre LeBrun reported, quote, "I will tell you right now, I think Rantanen believes he can make $14 million AAV on the open market." Suddenly, that doesn't seem like such a huge number anymore. It's a lot for a player, and he's not wrong. If he hits the open market and says, "I'm not coming back, I want the most money I can go get," he'll go get $14 million somewhere from some team, maybe a Chicago type. But I think if he stays with the Avs, it's got to be smaller than that. But this is kind of the Marner situation all over again. Like, what's Marner without Matthews? What's Rantanen without McKinnon? And there's so many examples of that. Like, how much better can he carry an offense? Can he be the guy on a team that doesn't have talent as good as him around him? I'm not saying he can't, but we've never seen him not be with McCarr and McKinnon and other guys for long stretches. I know all those guys have been hurt at different points, but never for a half a season or a full season. So if he thinks he can go be the guy somewhere and make $14 million, maybe he goes. But I don't think he is. I think he's really good in his situation that he's in right now, and I don't think he should walk away from that, even if that means taking somewhere closer to 12 or 13.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think getting to play with Nathan McKinnon on a nightly basis, it's just a win-win. Like, you won't find a better situation than that if you're Mikko Rantanen. He makes it so easy. So it is what it is. But at this point in his career, this is his last big contract. He will not sign another huge deal. So
yeah,
selfishly, he has to set himself up, which the guy's made over $60, $70 million in his life. So he's set up already. So I don't think that should play a part in it. But you want to make the most that you could possibly make. And if you're a UFA and you're listening to other offers and teams are, you know, knocking at the door, what would you do then at this situation, Tim? Let me pose something to you. You're Rantanen. You have the Colorado Avalanche offering you $12.5 million for 8 years. You're comfortable. You've been here for 10 years. You've won a Stanley Cup. $12.5 million. But you have another contract in front of you from the Chicago Blackhawks. I'm using the Blackhawks just because I know they have a lot of money. They have a lot of young potential. They got some good prospects in the system. You have a contract from the Chicago Blackhawks for $14.5 million for 8 years. So that's $16 million more you would make over 8 years. What do you do?
Yeah, no question. I'm taking the 12 and a half. I'm staying exactly where I am. You got to think, like, first, the hockey side of it, you know that you fit. You know that you produce. I mean, I think he's also one of the more underrated players, which is weird to say, but last year, 104 points. The year before that, 105. Yep. He's got 60 and 43 this year. He's going to get 110, 115. Like, he's so, so good. But again, it brings back to, like, the best thing about what he's got going right now is that he's on line with McKinnon every night. He's on a power play with McCarr every night. And he's a huge part of that. He makes them better too. But it's silly to walk away from that, to bet on yourself and all the unknowns, especially since you won a cup. Like, you've won a cup. You've proven that you can win. You've proven that this is a good formula to be a part of. So I think walking away from that would be silly. Unless, like, Colorado said, "Hey, listen, we have some things to figure out. We're maxing out at like $11 million. And it starts to feel like that's not enough, not even close to enough. Maybe that changes things, but 12.5 easy. I'm staking right where I am.
They will have the money because you have Gabe Landeskog on LTIR. You're getting Rantanen's 9.25 off the books. So there is money to make this deal work, but it's just, I don't know. Maybe he wants to be that guy. Maybe he's tired of being Robin to Batman's McKinnon. You know what I mean? And players do feel that way, but also I think in the back of his head, he knows, like, I'm in a pretty good situation here. Every day I get to show up and play with the best player on the planet, Nathan McKinnon. So I think he sticks. I agree with you. And I think the number will be in the $11 to $12 million range, a team-friendly deal, because the Avalanche are kind of, when you look at numbers, they're going to have to do some finagling with these contracts. They're coming up against the cap here, whatever it's going to be, but they pay a lot of players a lot of money. So they're going to have to do some gymnastics here to make this work. Like Samuel Girard, Devin, they pay their D-men a lot of money. And they have a lot of holes to fill in the back end of their bottom six. So he deserves it, though. He's a hell of a hockey player. It's one of those things. You look at the combos, and you always just think, gosh, would he be good, you know, without that guy? You mentioned Crosby, Malkin. I think Crosby's fine without Malkin. I think Malkin is not fine without Crosby. Taves and Kane, I think they both would be fine without each other. Matthews, Marner, I think they both would be fine. Drysdale, that one is a question mark. He gets second, you know, defensive responsibilities to McDavid. Everybody focuses on McDavid. If you put Leon on another team where he's the top guy, I think he'd be fine. But would he get the 120, 130 points he gets always? I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, I think probably not. I think he's like at least a 90-point player, but yeah, he's not putting up the generational numbers that he's doing now.
I tell you what, watching last night's game with the Oilers, they stunk. They absolutely stunk. But when Knobloch wants to get this team going, when he puts out those three, Hyman, Drysdale, and McDavid, it's just impossible. And Bouchard on the back end. It's just the other three lines suck. Like the other three lines are just nothing going on. But when that one line's out there, it's fun to watch. Like, it's very fun to watch when they get going. Because Pittsburgh, I think, was up 5-1. They were waxing them. Like, it almost seemed like the Penguins had a power play for most of the game in the first period. And all of a sudden, Knobloch just went, nope, we can't do it anymore. He puts on, like, the Thanos glove and puts on the rings. Boom! Put on the juggernaut line. And then the game just switched. It just completely turned the other way. McDavid and Drysdale were buzzing around. They start scoring goals, and they made a game of it. But like I said, the other three lines are just so terrible without those guys. So I know they're fun to watch. Imagine to have that just in your back pocket if you're a coach, and then how you have to restrain yourself because you just want to play them to death. Like, oh, you guys are going to play 35 minutes tonight, all of you. Because even when they're at like 50%, they're better than Corey Perry and all these other guys the Oilers have, but you have to just have some restraint. Try to spread it around.
Did you see that in like Chicago or San Jose? We're like, hey, you know what? We need a couple. It's halfway through the third. Like, we're just rotating six guys now on forwards.
Tim, I saw it all the time. Right from the drop.
You start unloosening your skates.
Oh, yeah. The worst was when you do, because you're fresh in the first period, and different coaches have different philosophies, but some coaches, they would roll the first three lines like two or three times in a row, and then ease in the fourth line, and then when it's about your time to go, someone gets a penalty and you're like, damn it, because you got to start that rotation again. And so there'd be times, it's just like, it was not fun to just sit there and watch guys get on the ice over and over again. But yeah, I get it. They're the best players in the world. Play them as much as they can. All right, moving on. Toronto Maple Leafs. Talked about Mitch Marner. Huge piece of this team. Need to get him locked up. Huge, huge pressing. Got to get this done. Well, don't look now. The first line of the Toronto Maple Leafs has been going pretty swimmingly lately, and a big part of that is their young stud moose of a forward, Matthew Nyes, who really exploded last year. Played super, super great in the playoffs, put his imprint on this team, goes to the hard areas, gets in front of the net, uses his big body, really figured out how to play. You know, how to use his size for an advantage, especially in the playoffs. He's up too. You got Austin Matthews on that first line. He's locked up. His two wingers, they need new deals. Well, Matthew Nyes, he is going to want a huge pay raise because he's still working on a measly ELC that pays him $925,000 a year. And this guy wants to get paid. He was a low draft pick, second round, I think. What's his number? Because he is slowly but surely just imprinted himself on this team. He's a point per game guy potentially in the future, but right now he's even more so than Marco Rossi. I think there's a lot of question marks surrounding Matthew Nyes and what his potential could be on this team.
Yeah, because he's not like an offensive first guy. He does a lot of things really well. I really like him. Although he scored a hat trick the other night, he's got 27 points in 41 games this year. And these are, I really like Matthew Nyes. I've liked him ever since we got to watch him every night when in that Bruins series last year. And he's like, he's going to be a problem to play against. He's physical. He's smart. He has really good instincts. He has a nose for the net. And he's such a good piece, a counterpiece to the offensive elite guys that the Leafs have. You balance that out with a Nyes type player, it really rounds out their offense. So I like him a lot. But you look at his numbers, he's never put up crazy numbers. Because there's a like, okay, oh, 27 and 41. Okay, it's like a 55-point pace or whatever.
It's only a second full year. So you got to like...
Yeah, but when you go back through his stats, in the USHL, he was a point-per-game guy. Nothing crazy. Really good. He did 1 year at the University of Minnesota. Same thing. It's like 42 points in 40 games. So it's like he's never put up crazy numbers, and you can't expect him to do that in the NHL. And that's not a knock on him. If he's not an 80, 90-point guy, maybe 1 or 2 years where he is, but like he's not an offensive juggernaut of a man. So that's okay. It doesn't mean that he's not super valuable, but I think it does impact his number. And so this one's probably the hardest one for me to guess and project at, but I'm going to go somewhere in the $6 million range. I think maybe even 5 to 6 at 6 years, something like that. I think that's probably what he's worth. And I think maybe he outplays it, but I don't want to commit the Tim Stützle money to him when he doesn't put up numbers anywhere close to that.
Yeah, I think that's a good fit for him. And I do think his ceiling is around 50, 60 points. I think that's where he lives. And everybody always looks back and thinks, so, well, he's got to be like a Zach Hyman. You know, he was perfect with Austin Matthews and he went to greener pastures with Edmonton and they couldn't give him that much money. Everybody forgets Zach Hyman. His ceiling was 40 points with the Leafs. Like he never broke out until he got to Edmonton. So, you know, how history, revisionist history, it's always greener when we look back and, oh, it was so great. It was so great. Hyman was just, I'm going to go in the corner. I'm going to muck it out. I'm going to stir things up. And then hopefully Matthews and Marner or Nylander or Tavares, whoever it may be, can pot the goal. But he never was in on the goal score until he got to Edmonton and he broke out with 54 last year. So maybe Matthew Nyes has that in his future, but I think you can get by with a guy who puts up 50, 60 points and just goes to the net, creates the screen, draws the defense into the zone, creates some space for these guys. And if there's a scrum, he comes in and cleans up business. Nyes is 6'3", 220. He's a moose of a man. So I don't think he has to do too much. And just going back to the original question of how much he makes, I think 4 to 5 is a good number for him. Obviously, he'll want more. This is a case where I think he doesn't go long-term. I think he sets himself up for another contract when he's 27, 28. I think Matthew Nyes, when he goes into that office with his agent, he'll want a 4 to 5 year deal. I think that's a perfect length for this kid. It's good for the Leafs because they can get him relatively cheap, because when they want a shorter term, typically you're offering less money because you go, well, if you're not going to invest in our team, we're not going to throw a bunch of money at you. So I think 4 years, $5 million is a great number for him. I think it sets himself up for a long-term deal when he's 26, 27, but also gives the Leafs a little bit more time to see what they have and not investing a ton of money in this kid. So I don't know. I think that would work for both teams and player, and it's a smart maneuver for both parties.
I like it. There's one more, Evan Bouchard, the lone defenseman we'll talk about. He's got 41 points this year, plus 11. He's averaging about 23 minutes a game. We've all seen what he can do offensively. I was kind of, in my mind, liking him to Erik Karlsson a bit, although he's not quite as good as Erik Karlsson, and he's also not as bad defensively as Erik Karlsson, but he's an offensive defenseman who puts up great numbers on a high running gun offense, and I think you need guys like him in this league, because I started to think, okay, do you need a Bouchard type to win a cup? Well, Florida didn't have one, but Colorado did, and Tampa did. And
Florida also, like, you know, Brandon Montour played that part. Oliver Larson played that part. So they kind of did.
So, yeah, I think he's going to want a huge pay raise. And you also have to factor in like McDavid in a year and then the other pieces. So this is a tough one. What do you think?
I think this guy needs to, for an Edmonton Oilers sake, you have to get this done. I know McDavid's great. I know Drysdale's good. But when you look at the, and I don't want to go back to the Toronto Maple Leafs, this team doesn't succeed in Toronto because they don't have that defenseman who can quarterback power play, who can be the second wave, who could be a threat on the back end. Morgan Riley is not that guy. He's just not. So you need that defenseman to be a threat. And we saw last year in the playoffs, Evan Bouchard, he single-handedly changed games. He got 32, 36 points in the playoffs last year, something silly like that. 32 points in 25 games. The next closest D-man at 16. He doubled the next closest D-man in points in the playoffs last year. And that's why Edmonton was so deadly. In years prior, they still had McDavid, they still had Drysdale, they still had Hyman, they had all these lethal threats, and they didn't go as far. Bouchard is crucial for these guys. Crucial to have someone on the back end who can facilitate, distribute, and he is good in the D zone for the most part. He plays with Matias Ekholm, so Ekholm is a great safety blanket, but you have to get this done for the Edmonton Oilers. And I don't, listen, I don't know what the number is. You're paying Darnell Nurse. If we're going by like what we talked about with other players, you know, he can't make more than Matthews because he's not as good. So it's got to be lower. If you're Evan Bouchard and you're sitting in that locker room and you're staring over at Darnell, who makes 9.25, you're like, I'm twice as good as this guy. I should make 18. If you're paying him 19.25 or 9.25. So his number has to be in the realm of all the other highest paid defensemen in the league. We're talking Makars and Fox and Yossis and Hedmans. That's where he lives now. So it has to be over $12 million, Tim. It has to be. The market for a defenseman who can move the puck, it's sky high. It's absolutely sky high. So I think he falls in at 12 plus.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. But then you get into like, $40 million for three players, you know, like it's a hard way to win, but you can't not pay him and you can't not have him on your team. It's just the price of having really good players. So yeah, I think you had it done.
Darnell Nurse just sucks so bad. Like, I'm just looking at his stats right now. It's just like, how does this guy make 9.25 his career? And I know he's not a puck mover points guy, but when you're paying someone that much, you got to score more than 30 points. Like, let's go. It's crazy. He had that one good year before he signed his deal where he had a ton of 5-on-5 points, and he just, like, everything was going in. But, boy, that's they got that one for another 5 years. That's a whoop. But, yeah, Bouchard, he will make 12.25. 12.5, I think, is a good number for him.
Yeah, I agree.
He deserves it. All right, we've been talking a long time. Anything else? Any quick hits, Tim?
I think we can just skip over the stuff and get into the weekend. What do you think?
No, because this is what you do. And I know you're gaslighting me a little bit because this episode's getting long. We'll do it quick. The Bruins, there's rumors about, you know, per NHL sources from Marco D'Amico, the Bruins have been talking to the Canucks regarding their top two centers, JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. Why are we doing this, Tim? As a Bruins fan, what are we doing here? If you're Don Sweeney, why are we talking to the Canucks about a first-line center? We already got Elias Lindholm from him. Now we want another center from the Vancouver Canucks. That's going to solve all our problems?
Well, the short answer to your why is that there's two elite centers available and you need one. That's a starting point. But yeah, you zoom out a little bit further and like to your point where I know you're going with this. Is this the right move for this franchise at this point? maybe not so much. What do you think?
Well, again, and I always go back to this. Are we good enough to win this Stanley Cup this year? They lost last night 4-1. They are now in the wild card. They're getting actively booed off the ice. Fans are chanting for Don Sweeney to be fired. This team is in a spiral. They've lost, what, 7 of their last 10? They're not a good hockey team. It's just how it is. Friend of the show, Jeremy Swayman, has looked pedestrian. At other times, he's looked superhuman. So he hasn't been as consistent as he has in years past. This team, Tim, we'll be out of a playoff spot by the end of the month, the way they're trending. Ottawa's playing really good hockey. Pittsburgh playing fantastic hockey. The Canadians are playing great. This team will be out of the playoffs soon. And Don Sweeney should be fired. And he should be fired. They have no business trying to reload and get a first-line center and paying him all that money. This No, they need to work on their prospects pool. They need to get some young players into this lineup. You have to just completely not revamp. You have good pieces. It's not this year. This is not the year to do it. And maybe they are playing the long-term game and getting this guy for a long-term deal. And that I can understand that. But if you're the Vancouver Canucks, who do you want from the Bruins? What do the Bruins have to give up? You have zero prospects that I would want. Trent Frederick? They've been dangling that carrot out to everybody. Trent Frederick? Goodness gracious. They act like they're dangling like this all-star young superstar who's just so good. He's maybe a third line guy who can fight a little bit. Let's just put a sticker on him. He ain't a top two line guy.
That's always the Bruins fans thing. Like, you see some players available, like Brent Seabrook might be in the market. Let's offer like Ferentz and a second round pick. Yeah. And
see, we got Jake DeBrusk.
Yeah. DeBrusk, Grizzlick, and a third round pick. It's like, No, not going to happen.
So it's just laughable that they're even pandering this about. Vancouver can get a lot more for those two guys. They're, like, those guys are good. It's just funny. The Bruins are always it. The Bruins and the Leafs. Everybody always just puts them in every single deal. All right. Anything else, Tim?
No, we got some weather coming in this weekend, so I had to go prepare for that.
Everybody has weather coming in.
The class, yeah, you know what I mean by that, though. The classic, like, when you know, like, it rains like 1 inch in Atlanta and there's just pileups on the highway and stuff, that's kind of what we're heading into. It's supposed to, I'm getting all these like severe weather alerts of like how to prepare, and you look at it, it could be up to 1 inch of snow. I think it's going to freeze. I think it's going to rain then drop. So maybe there'll be some ice, but yeah, it's just funny how people are panicking down here.
When I lived in Houston, we would have like a small dusting of snow once a year, and people would like, the apocalypse, the sky is falling, everyone's going to die. Well, bunker down, Tim. Hold your loved ones tight and just be careful. Hopefully we'll talk to you on Monday. And everybody else, have a good weekend. Get out there, have some fun. New year 2025. And we'll talk to you later. Cheers, everybody.
Ugh, winter can be hard. So why make it harder for yourself by going treat-free? Get your slurp on with Costa's Spanish Latte. It's sweet, velvety, and absolutely delicious. It's your daily latte with a little added indulgence. Brighten up your winter and get your slurp on with Costa Coffee's Spanish Latte. Plus, join the Costa Club for exclusive offers and even more treats. GB stores only.